It is the third of March, duh. We're done with February. And we're working through chapter 5, which is a long slog, folks. And you got to study, because you got to know this stuff down. Any questions, any thoughts, any ideas before we get started? We've got a lot to do today. We went through the different markets last week. We're going to take a look at market transactions and then spend some time on the different indices. Finally, we get to indices 7 weeks into the semester. We've been talking about these things since the beginning, but now we're going to identify them and the ones I want you to memorize. There are going to be a few that I want you to memorize because there are dozens and dozens. But first, we need a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Oh, David, all right. Now, you can't create a hostile environment.
No, I know.
Okay, good.
But since all the jokes seem to be the same, right?
We're very similar, yes. No, eventually we'll get to battle the sexist jokes.
Right. So this is back to the Italian jokes.
Oh, Italian jokes. I want to hear Italian jokes.
Does anybody know the streets of New York?
The streets of New York. 7th Avenue, Broadway.
Where would a man find a fruit market? Do you have any idea?
Fruit market.
Yeah, an open market.
9th?
Okay, all right.
Okay.
So this Italian guy is walking down the street, and he comes to this fruit market, and he looks at these two beautiful watermelons. He says, "I gotta have those watermelons." So he goes back to the market, picks up these watermelons, and now he's walking like this down the street, right? And a friend meets him and says, "Hey, what you doing, man?" Finally, "Hey, don't you know I can't talk without my head?"
That was well done. That's right. We can't, if you tie your hands around Italian, you can't talk. It's a speech impediment. Okay, great. Let's get going. Thank you, David. Thank you. Yes. All right, now, you know the terms bull market, bear market? If you don't, you need to know them. And there's no real one definition, but a bull market is when things are going well. You know, government's happy, everybody's happy, people are getting jobs, and the economy's recovering. Bear markets are when the market falls, and typically it's a 20% drop or more. A 10%, 5% drop, 15%, that's called a correction. Now, where do the terms come from? What you will be told is that bulls throw their opponents up into the air. They charge ahead. And bears are more reclusive. And they knock their opponents down. But that's probably not where the terms came from, but that's what people will tell you. If those of you who are into entomology of words and phrases, this is supposedly where the bear market came from. Bearskin jobbers who didn't sell the bearskin before the bear was caught. I haven't figured out what that means, but you go right ahead and do it on your own if you're so inclined. Now, last week when we did our market simulation, we saw that there were two different types of orders. We did the market order and the stop order, or sometimes called the stop loss order. There are two more that you should at least be familiar and know they exist, but you don't have to worry too much about them. This is the one that you really should use, in my humble opinion. You will hear traders say that they like the stop loss. George uses that, right? How did it work for you?
It helps
you from losing a lot of money, but it guarantees the loss. That's why it's called stop loss. So what does the market mean? Market means buy it, sell it now. Get out there, find the best price you can. That's what you're supposed to do on my behalf. You're my broker. And buy it if I want to buy, or sell it if I want to sell. Whereas a limit order says, I will buy it, I will sell it, but only at the price that I specify. If I say, yeah, this is selling for $27, but I only will sell it if it goes up to $29. That's it. That's my limit. Or I'll only buy it if it goes down to 25. So those are called limit orders. The problem with a limit order is, what if it never hits the price that you're looking for? You never get it. Oh, well, that's your trade-off. Now, a stop loss means as soon as it hits that trigger point, And this is what we did last week. As soon as it hit that trigger point, it becomes a market order. So the idea is, look, I've made some money off of this stock. It's now selling for $25, but I bought it for $10. If it goes below 23, I want to stop my loss. I don't want to lose any more. And traders will tell you that this is the way, the only way to trade. You set stop loss provisions, stop loss transactions, so that you don't lose too much. And we'll see later on some guy talking about why he sets stops here. And George uses those for his futures. And they stop losses and they also stop gains. And I have never figured this one out. If somebody figures it out, I can't tell why this is any different than a limit order. But it's the same idea as a stop loss, but instead of becoming a market order, it becomes a limit order. Once it triggers a certain point, it becomes a limit order. So what's that? How's that difference from a limit order? I don't know. I have never figured it out. And I asked my boss once, and he explained it to me, and I didn't understand what he said. And I thought it's the same thing. So all you have to be able to understand is this guy right here. The other ones, you just have to be able to identify and know, oh, yeah, we're trying to save ourselves some money. Although you can use limit orders to buy or sell at the price you want, and stop loss and stop limit orders to lock in profits or to protect against losses, remember they trigger automatically. By the time you've changed your mind and run to the computer and said, cancel this stop, too late. Because the market's way ahead of you, and the transactions are happening at millions of transactions per second, so you can't get to it. And this is how, did you hear about Martha Stewart?
Yeah.
Remember her? She got in trouble with the SEC.
Like she got tipped off, right? She pulled that off
her job. Right. She got tipped off. Her ex-boyfriend was the president of a company whose stock was about to die because the company was going to be denied their drug approval by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA. And so the broker called her and said, Sam is selling his shares. You better sell. So she sold her shares. That's illegal insider trading. You can't do that. And so what she said is, oh, no, we had a stop loss order on the account. Well, she knew she was good. First of all, the woman used to be a broker, folks. She used to be a stockbroker, believe it or not. That's how you know she's a shark. And she said, oh, we had a stop loss order. Well, she knew that there's no verbal stop loss orders. Everything's typed into the computer. There would be a transaction there. And I think they did it. I think her publicist said, do it. Go to jail. You'll be in jail 4 or 5 months, and you'll make a ton of publicity. You can't buy that publicity. They'll have you showing the convicts how to make a turkey or something like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I am sure they said, no, just go to jail for a few months. No big deal. You don't understand what kind of publicity you'll get. Okay. Worked for her. And so here is a table from your book. I normally use and recommend market orders, folks. You want to buy it, buy it. You want to sell it, sell it. But short-term traders, speculators, tell me that they only use stops. They only have limit orders on all of their trades. Now, buying on margin and selling short. We are going to come back to these in detail at the end of the semester. And yes, you have to understand them. And these are two of the biggest bugaboos when you take the Series 7. Because they're tough. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. But all you have to know for Chapter 5 is that buying on margin is borrowing money from your broker to enhance your return. Remember George asked about the margin calls in the video last week? This is what they're talking about. You've borrowed money from your broker to buy shares, and now those shares have fallen. You need to bring us more cash. So you're borrowing money from your broker to buy stocks. That's all you have to know about now. Why would you want to do this? Well, it can increase, enhance, magnify your gains. And guess what? Nothing's free, right? What else is there? It magnifies your losses if things go wrong. So we'll discuss these in detail at the end of the semester. Selling short is the attempt to make money when the market goes down. You, most people believe, you think, I can make money when the market goes up, right? Isn't that what we're trying to do? Buy low, sell high? Well, you're absolutely right. But you can do it in reverse. You can sell high, buy low. Huh? See, it doesn't matter what order you do it in. Most people try to buy low and sell high. But you could turn around and sell high and then buy low. Now, don't worry about the mechanics. We'll deal with them later. All you have to know is that you're borrowing stock and selling it in the hopes that the price will go down. Huh? You sell stock that you don't own? Doesn't that sound illegal? No, it's perfectly legal. You borrow it from somebody else. They don't even know you borrowed it. The brokerage firm takes care of all that. And then you buy it back later on and replace it, and they never even knew it was happened. Yes?
Kramer is a hedge fund guy, but a big part of how he made his money was shorting.
And how he lost a lot of money, too. Because he'll tell you he lost a lot of money shorting. Shorting and margining are risky, folks.
I do it all the time.
You do it all the time. Well, I hope you, I wish you well. But it is, for a vast majority of investors, myself included, I've never sold these things short. I don't do margining. There's a reason why you want to do margining. We'll talk about those later. Using a margin account can be useful once you've built up a substantial portfolio. It allows you to borrow from your portfolio without selling your stocks. But that's all you have to know for Chapter 5, right? If you go through Chapter 2, which has a lot about the transactions, they're going to go into too much detail about this. So please, don't get confused. Don't, well, I have to understand this. No, you don't. This is all you have to know about buying on margin and selling short. Questions, thoughts? Am I going too fast? All right, now, transaction costs. How much does it cost to do business? Well, traditionally, transaction costs were in the 1 to 4 to 5% range, and sometimes higher, especially with small company stocks. But now, deep discount internet brokers, technology, have driven the commissions down to as low as $5 per trade, $7 per trade. You see these ads, right? Every time you go to a Yahoo website or Morningstar website. A few firms used to offer free trades. But have transaction costs really gone down? The answer is yes, they have. But more and more of the cost is hidden from the investor. Especially, now those aren't my words, folks, the internet garbage brokers. Those weren't my words. This was a client who said that, and I thought, whoa, what is he talking about? And then my boss finally explained it to me. Okay, here it is, folks. Here's an example. A deep discount internet broker offers trades for $7. We won't say any names, Scott Trade. In the fine print of the client broker agreement is included a provision for allowing the broker to solely utilize exclusive stock dealers and market makers. If you remember, when we looked at the Casas de Cambios, we saw several prices, right? Right? We didn't see just one price and one price to buy, one price to sell. And when we were doing our market simulation, there were people yelling out different 27, 26, 25, right? Well, that's what's going on all the time. And so you see, first of all, you're seeing it 15 minutes in the past. I forgot to look at today. So we're up almost 6%. Did you notice that? I forgot to look at
last week.
Man, who knows about today? Okay. Oof, I got to tell you. I forgot to do that. Darn it. Let's put that down. Let's go look at our portfolio. I'm getting old, folks. I'm getting old. I'm forgetting things. But that's all right. I think a lot of it is the pace of my life. It's incredible. My wife keeps asking, what else do you want to do, Frank? Is there anything else you want to do? The quoted price is simply the best price available. But at any one time, there are dozens of prices quoted as dealers and market makers compete for buy and sell orders. The chosen dealer doesn't necessarily have the best price. So instead of paying $20, as you saw on the screen, you might wind up paying $20.05 or 4 cents. And these spreads, these differences, these markups, markdowns, have been getting smaller and smaller as more market makers get into the business. So the investors see $7 on their confirmation. The investors does not see the extra $5 they paid on a 100-share purchase because of the dealer's markup when you buy or markdown when you sell. So here is what, I don't know if you still get this, but this was on every trade confirmation email from Scottrade. Now look, it's all in uppercase. Whenever a business sends you stuff all uppercase, what they're trying to do is show you that this is important and hope you don't read it. because it's harder to read all uppercase. It turns out that it's harder to it's good for headlines, but it's horrible for prose. And that's why they do it. They try to say, well, look, we put it all uppercase to make it look important so you wouldn't read it. But let's read it together. Scott Trade Incorporated receives remuneration for directing orders to particular dealer, broker-dealers or market centers for execution. Such remunerations is considered compensation to the firm and the source and the amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. It just reminds me of plain song. It reminds me of Gregorian chant when I look at these stuff. Like, what the hell are they talking about? Do you understand what they're telling you? They are saying to you that we're getting a kickback. They won't use the word kickback. But they are routing your order to a specific market maker, a specific specialist. We don't use the term specialist anymore. A specific dealer, just as if they had routed your order to one of the Casas de Cambios that doesn't have the best, necessarily have the best price. And then what happens is the market maker gives them money back. You see? You understand? Nod your head yes. Or go, no, Frank, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Because nobody knows what they're talking about. You understand? They don't understand. They go, I'm getting $7 a trade. I said, okay.
Sure you are.
Yeah. You see the broker's $7 confirmation. Okay, I charged you $7 for the commission, the brokerage. But you don't see the markup or the markdown. And if you call them, if you ask them, they're supposed to tell you. But who's going to ask them? Yeah.
So are there reputable companies that don't do that? They actually give you as advertised?
Yes, but they charge more. If you go to us, we'll charge you $29 a trade.
Right.
But we're going to give you the best price. I've watched. And we pay extra. I don't know how much we pay. It's not me. But if you sit there on the screen, you can see all the transactions as they go through. And they go through really fast. I mean, you're just seeing them go down. And I've watched when we've done a transaction like 187 shares or some strange number. And there it is. There's our trade. And there's the price. Oh, yeah, that was a pretty good trade. That was the price. So we'll give you the best price, but we charge you a lot more. Now, the one, I'm going to give you the name of the one company who charges pretty low, and at least as a few years ago, did not have this in their agreement, and that is Schwab. Schwab was the only one of the low, the E-Trashes and the Ameritrash and the Snot Trade. This was the only one of the very low-cost brokerages that did not have this in their client service agreement. I don't know if they still do. And I haven't called Scott Trade lately to see if this is still true.
What about banks?
Well, if you go to a bank, you go to Wells Fargo, they're going to move you over to one part of the bank that says investments. Mm-hmm. It ain't the bank anymore. You're now dealing with Wells Fargo Financial Advisors. You're now dealing with a brokerage firm with the same name. And I've never dealt with them, so I don't know what they charge per trade. I do know that USAA... You military folks, they have a brokerage firm. And I can imagine, I don't know because I've never dealt with them, I can imagine they don't do this stuff. Find out if they... Find out if they're doing this. That's what... It's in the client broker agreement, right? The 87 pages that you scrolled through and read every line, didn't you? And to Scott Trade's defense, they prominently send this to you on every email, or at least they used to. I've been talking to a guy Scott Trade about something else, and I should call him and ask him if, because there's a Scott Trade right down on Chula Vista, right downtown. Have you noticed that? Right at 8th Street and 3rd, in the big new professional buildings.
There's this
few blocks down. Wait a minute, where's the courthouse? Third? Okay, I'm getting confused. Not the at 4th and F is where the city hall is. So the courthouse is at H and... Okay, I'm not sure. I don't know Chula Vista as well as I should. Okay, questions, thoughts? So, as long as you understand that and you're willing to pay the extra few cents per share, no big deal.
So, really, you're getting kind of screwed out of the best price.
That's, you know, they would probably beg to differ with you, George. The Securities and Exchange Commission says that your broker has a duty to seek the best execution that is necessary, reasonably available for its customers' orders. But it's not a guarantee. You're supposed to find the best price available. That's what you were supposed to do last Thursday, remember? That was your job as a broker. You go out and get the best price. But it's not a guarantee. The Securities and Exchange Commission requires broker-dealers to notify their customers if their orders are not routed for best execution. And typically, this disclosure is on the trade confirmation slip you receive after placing your order. That's what we saw in the previous slide. And this is Investopedia, which some of you actually have used. Some in the online class have used. It's actually a pretty good resource. I forget, somebody bought it, I think Forbes or Fortune. But it's actually a pretty good resource. And determining whether or not a customer got best execution can be very difficult. Here is an example of the Securities and Exchange Commission trying to enforce the rules and not doing a very good job of it. It's from a law professor's website. And it was a deal with Scottrade. They were yelling at Scottrade, saying, you didn't do the best you could to get the best price. And Scottrade said, yes, we did. We did what was reasonably expected of us. And we warned our clients that they're not necessarily getting the best price, and we're getting a kickback. And Scottrade got away with it. The Securities and Exchange Commission was looking into making the cost more transparent, possibly showing the customer the difference between the dealer's price and the best price available at the time of the transaction. Maybe even gas, showing the total cost of the transaction from the markup and markdown. In other words, the best price available at that time was $20, and you paid $20.03, so on a $100 trade, you paid us an extra $3. You with me? Needless to say, the deep discount internet brokers cried that it would drive up the cost of commissions and ultimately hurt the consumer, and the proposal died. So it is up to you, dear students, dear investors, to see if you're getting the best execution. But how can you, a lone investor, determine if you're getting the best price if even the Securities and Exchange Commission has trouble enforcing the rules?
Right.
And the answer is, you can't. You can't. You just got to deal with it. You either go with one of the low-cost internet brokers, or you find somebody who's going to give you the best price available but charge you more. And check out USAA, check out Schwab. At least as of a few years, see, I haven't kept up with it. I need to keep up with it. All right, now, there are some old folks who are going to say, you should only buy 100 shares or multiples of 100 shares. And you should know this term, even though technology is making it obsolete, and it's called a round lot. And as we said last Thursday, if you yelled out as a broker on the floor, 25, that means I will sell you 100 shares at $25 a share. If you yelled out two at 25, that meant 200, two round lots at $25 a share. If you moved your hand this way, it means you were going to buy them. You understand? So two at 25. I'll buy two at 25. But that's all gone now. Everybody's sitting in front of a computer. So it doesn't matter. So what they used to do is they used to charge you an eighth or a quarter, and believe it or not, folks, they did eighths of a dollar. They used to charge you an extra 12.5 cents or 25 cents if you bought, or pay you 12.5 cents or 25 cents less if you sold an odd lot. Odd lot. It's a little hard to say. Try it. Odd lot. Reminds me of James Bond and Odd Job. But so some people will tell you should not buy odd lots. Well, technology has driven the odd lot differential, the spread, down to pennies. So big deal, you buy 10 shares, you pay an extra dollar, 10 cents. It won't be 10 cents, it'll be 2 cents, extra 20 cents. So I don't think it's anything you should worry about. You want to buy 10 shares, you got enough money to buy 10 shares, $800, $80 a share, go ahead and buy it. Don't worry about the odd lot differential. It means you might pay an extra, 10 cents or 20 cents. Questions? Am I going too fast? No? Yes.
How do you find a good broker?
That's a good question. And we talk about brokerage firms at the end. Now, remember, there are the full service brokers. You've heard of Merrill Stinch and Morgan Stupid? You've heard of them? Yeah. They will treat you very well. Of course, you got to hide your tattoos, and you have at least $500,000 to invest, don't you? It used to be $50,000, but I just heard somebody, one of my clients, say he said she inherited some money from her parents, and their parents' broker, said, well, he only takes clients who have at least $500,000. And he's going to up that to $750,000. And I'm not making any money talking to you right now. Oh, my God. I just thought, it makes you want to take a bath or something, being around somebody like that. And then there are the discount brokers, but they're disappearing. They're still around. Sometimes they're called the mom-and-pop shops. A.G. Edwards, Edward Jones, and Schwab used to be the big discount broker, but they've become a deep discount broker. And the deep discount brokers are the E-Trades and the Ameritrades and the Scott Trades, and there's a bunch of them now. And so how do you find a good broker? You've got to find somebody you trust. And you have to ask yourself, do I really want to buy and sell individual stocks and bonds, or am I interested in mutual funds? Because if you're interested in mutual funds, you don't need a broker. Or your broker can go right to the mutual fund company.
So how would you look at...
Very good. We're going to see that later on. But there's a wonderful place called FINRA. What a great name, right? FINRA.org. Type it in, FINRA.org, and look for their broker check. Look for broker check, and you will see if there's any hanky-panky. You will see if there's any disciplinary actions, or settlements, or admissions of hanky-panky. And you can look at me. Remember, you have to spell my name correctly. You have to spell P-A-I-A-N-O. And as of last time I checked, which wasn't that long ago, you will see that there are no disciplinary actions. So check it out. Check out Merrill Lynch and check out, you'll see a bunch from some people.
What are some disciplinary actions that
you take? Well, they can kick you out of the industry, or you can go to jail if you do certain things, but normally they just, what?
Complaints.
Yeah, complaints. Normally they settle. They just say, all right, you know, we put you in something you really shouldn't have been put in, and we'll pay, you lost $15,000, we'll pay the
$15,000.
Well, the FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, works on behalf of the Securities and Exchange Commission. They are the non-governmental organization. We're going to discuss the NASDAQ. Remember the NASDAQ? National Association of Securities Dealers. They used to be the ones who were in charge of that. But they gave that up, and they became the NASDAQ. And now they just concentrate on the NASDAQ. Then the FINRA took over. And, I don't know that much about them. The only interactions I've had with them, they've acted like I was some kind of criminal because I taught this stuff. At the same time, I'm a broker. And I said, but you don't understand. I love teaching. You know, a woman was just... She was incredulous. How you dare teach it? You are probably soliciting in class. I said, yeah, I am. I want them to start investing. I want them to start now. I don't care if they go with me. I don't care what they do. I just want them to get started. $50 a month, $100 a month. And she looked at me like, $100 a month? I said, yeah, most people don't have $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 a month. They live in a different world. They live in a very different world. You know, they get, yeah, it's a very different world. Yeah, but told my boss, I don't want to get too much of this, but when I started, this was 98, when I got my broker's license, I want to concentrate on getting people to put $50 or $100 a month away. And she looked at me. She goes, you're not going to make any money doing that. I don't care. I make enough money teaching, thank you very much. And, whatever. Okay, now, reading stock quotes. Different sources will contain some, all, or more of these statistics. Or what are all these? We'll discuss these later. Some we won't even bother. Some people put a lot of emphasis on the volume. And I think, it's just a volume. But the bid and the ask, we've already discussed those. We'll discuss those again in more detail. The dividend yield, PE ratio, year-to-date change. Remember that all the things you're looking at are 15 minutes in the past, unless you pay extra or go to your brokerage firm and look it up. And they used to have these free deals where they let you see the real time. It's called real time. I don't know, it's a silly name, but they let you see the current stock for free for a month, and then you had to start paying.
For the P.E. ratio, is it the higher it is, the better it is?
We'll discuss P.E. ratio in detail in a few not today. We'll get to it though. We're going to get to, we're going to spend a lot of time on PE. Don't worry, George. Okay, now here's the New York. I mean, sorry. This is the Wall Street Journal. It's the only newspaper that keeps. Used to be newspapers every day would tell you what was, you know, what the prices of yesterday's stocks were, but not anymore. They gave up because they can't compete with the internet. Oh my God! You mean you actually wait till the next day to find out how much your stock is worth? Oh, how 20th century! But here, here's the year-to-date percentage change in the high and the low and the name of the company, Johnson & Johnson, the dividend yield, and all that other stuff. But we'll take, we'll use Yahoo to do that. For example, this is what we're going to do. I still like Yahoo, even though they've done their best to destroy it. Anybody still use Yahoo email? Isn't it horrible? It is. Why do you still use it? My wife for years kept saying, this is horrible. I said, yeah. Will you finally go over to Gmail? She goes, okay. Last year we finally moved her over. Bloomberg, a lot of people tell me they use that like that. I don't think it's that great. MarketWatch is Wall Street Journal's free version. It's okay. Morningstar, okay, but they're going to try to sign you up every 5 minutes. They're going to say, ooh, wouldn't you like the premium service for $30 a month, $50 a month? Any others? Anybody use any others? No? Well, we've already used Yahoo, so let's take a look at it. And because I wanted to look at it anyway, let's take, and I forgot to look at it. So let's go to finance.yahoo.com. And what they've done is they've added this thing where they just keep throwing, it used to compartmental things. They used to have things that, I don't do it anymore. But now they just have dozens. It just keeps going on and on and on and on. I don't know what they're trying to, they're trying to get people to click on the ones that are sponsored. You see, you just look at all these different advertisements, but some of them are sponsored. And that's when they get money. So I think that's what they did. But still, this is the best part of Yahoo. Quote, lookup. So, oh, let's do our portfolio real quick. How we doing? Okay, business 123.01. Dip. Okay. Don't skip for now. Okay, my portfolios. Ooh, we're not doing too badly, folks. Look at that, almost 7%. So, who wants to sell First Solar? You traders, you speculators out there. You want to sell it now?
Maybe a little bit later.
Maybe a little bit later. You look greedy. Now, we're going to see that one of the worst, one of the mistakes that investors often make is selling their winners. And they keep their losers. They want to wait till losers come back. So a trader, though, a speculator would say, no, you've made enough money. Wait for it to go down again and then sell. Yes? It ain't easy. How do you know when to sell? We'll talk about that later on. It's not easy. How do you know when to buy? It's not easy. If you dollar cost average, you don't care. You got George. I wish you a lot of success. I've been trying to convince him to stop it, but he's going to continue to do it. But right here, folks, we go to Yahoo Finance, and what company? We already looked up a couple companies. What do you want to look up? Huh? Any companies? J.P. Morgan Chase? Okay, I happen to know that the symbol is JPM, but if you typed in J.P. Morgan, oh, okay, they already figured it out. They think you want J.P. Morgan. And this is your assignment chapter 5. I'm going to pass out right now. Your assignment for chapter 5 is to go look up some stocks. So let me pass it out right now. Did I pass it out to some people already asked for it. So
the stock in your iPhone thing out here?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what service they use, but they're probably 15 minutes behind. Yeah, they're probably not the current. You probably have to pay for that. Okay. Did you get one, George?
Okay.
It's using Yahoo? Yeah, okay. Yahoo still has the best. This page right here. What?
GoPro is killing it.
GoPro is killing it. You're right. We should have picked GoPro. GoPro. GoPro, okay. And so what are all these pieces? We're, what? Don't worry. They'll be back there. At the end, go past them that way. We're going to take a look at some of these. PE, earnings per share, dividend yield. And then this is the best part. You can look at the key statistics profile, Headlines, we'll take a look at that chart later on. They got rid of the better chart. They kept the bad chart. Financial statements, the competitors, that's a very important one. You can't look at a company without looking at its competitors. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to look up some companies. And I picked these for various reasons, but you don't have to stop with just these. And remember, if you're interested in the company, don't forget to take a look at its competitors. Okay. Don't forget to look at its competitors. Where are they? Here you go. Some more. Pass these back. Okay. So we'll discuss these as we go along. But we'll talk about the dividend yield, very important number, the PE, earnings per share, market capitalization. Volume, I don't pay attention to the volume. If it's a big company, you don't care. If it's a small company, I guess that's important. And notice, it hasn't budged today. That's interesting. J.P. Morgan Chase hasn't budged at all. Real time. This is, they're saying it's a real time price, but I don't believe it. I think that, yes?
What's a good medical technology company?
You ever hear of Medtronic? Medtronic is a very good medical technology company. And then don't forget to look at its competitors, because there's also Boston Scientific, Johnson & Johnson. Those are also very important medical device companies. But, the health world is huge.
Did you hear about that new tech they're rolling in where it's like UV rays to clean the whole room after?
Oh, UV to clean the room? Who's that?
I don't know.
Find it out. Research it. Type it in. So I know this is going to sound a little bit pejorative and not so nice, but I want you to get lost. Okay? When you start doing this, I really hope you just get immersed in it and start clicking around and clicking around. Don't stop, because you can click, you can go to the profile and then click on the actual company, because here's the website. They give you the website. Here's the homepage for the company. Here's a description of more about Medtronic PLC. And then you can look at their competitors and take a look at their competitors. So I hope you actually enjoy this, if that makes any sense. Does that make any sense? Some people just go, okay, they fill out all this stuff. The information is not the end. That's not the reason for the assignment. The reason for the assignment is the experience of doing this. And one of the cool things, I shouldn't tell you this beforehand, but if you enjoy it, that's a good sign. That's a good sign that you probably will enjoy being your own stock picker, your own investor. If you hate it, mutual funds. Okay, you with me? You with me? Understand? Because some people come back and say, you know, this is really boring. I say, oh, sorry. Other people say, this was exciting. I had never heard this about this company. I looked at this company, and that's good sign. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great investor. It's just that's what I found. Because people tend to do what they enjoy, and if they enjoy it, they tend to do well at it. Not always. Okay, I still use Yahoo to research individual stocks, even though I don't really like what they've done to the reporting. They have some awesome commentators, but you can't find their commentaries anymore. They used to be right there. They used to be right there, and now you have to just sort of, you have to really sift through. And I think what Yahoo's trying to get you to do is click on their advertisements. All right, finally. Oh, we got there. We got there. Okay, we got to get this. We're doing slide 60 or bust, folks, today. Now, finally. So that's your assignment. On the back, we'll discuss the earnings calls later on the back. Well, that's more of the same. Our market averages and indices. From the beginning of our class, we've been saying that the stock market returns 8, 9, 10%, actually a little bit more. But how can we say that? Because there are thousands of companies out there. How can we say that stocks have returned approximately 10% over the past 70 years, 80 years, 100 years? The benchmark. The industry uses market averages and indices, benchmarks, standards. And that's what I asked you in Chapter 4. And some of you couldn't figure it out, and that's okay, I didn't mind. But this was a domestic, large-cap, growth and income stock mutual fund, right? What's the benchmark? Well, that would be the Standard & Poor's 500. This is a global bond fund. Well, what would that indicate? I think Barclays something or other. It used to be Lehman Brothers. Now it's Barclays Global Bond Fund Index. And that's what we measure ourselves against, and that's how we can say that we've done a certain amount over the last 50 years, 70 years, 80 years, 10 years. Now, there's a difference between a market average and a market index, but most people don't even know that there's a difference, and for all practical purposes, it's not important. The book goes into great detail about the differences. I don't care if you remember them. All we really have to know is there's only really one average that's really important. That's the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and it's the worst one out there, and it's the most popular. Figure that one out. You cannot help but hear about these every day. The Dow went down, the NASDAQ went up. What the hell are they talking about? Where all they're talking about is a list of stocks. Now, an average just uses the price. And the most important and the most useless, but the one you're going to hear the most about, is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And then there's the Dow Jones Utility Average and the Transportation Average. You hear sometimes you hear about those. But all the others are indices, which means they not only take a look at the average price, at the price, and average the price, they also take a look at how large the company is. They take into account the market capitalization, which we'll get to on Thursday, I'm pretty sure, how big the company is. The larger the market share, the more influence the security will have in the index. Market-weighted calculations were generally regarded as a better measure until the bubble of the late 1990s, when the fact that a company got bigger meant it was worth more in the index, and so people would buy more of that company because they were buying the index fund, and the index fund manager was required to go buy more of that shares, which means it pumped the price up even higher, and it was a bubble, a circular feedback mechanism until it wasn't, and then it goes in reverse. Here it is, dear students. Here is the one and only, the one that's been around the longest. And some of you are going to go, oh, we already did this, Frank, in another class. But so you guys got to keep your mouth shut. The Dow Jones, don't peek, Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow, the DJIA, been around since 1896. I hope I have enough of these. Pass them around, don't peek. Okay. The Dow. I'll put it over here. It is the most popular. It is the one that you always hear about, whether or not. Okay, okay, now don't peek. Don't peek, George. Okay. It is the one, no matter what they say, they will tell you the Dow went up 100 points or went down 100 points. They are 30. They are only 30. Everybody got one? And here they are. Look at them. There they are. 30 high-quality stocks, sometimes not, selected for total market value and broad public ownership and believed, as far as the Wall Street Journal is concerned, to reflect overall market activity. It still uses share price calculation. It doesn't use the market-weighted average. It's the most famous, and it changes from time to time as companies and industries evolve. As such, it is now more non-industrial companies than it is industrial companies. They still keep the name. How many industrial companies do you see there? Three or four? GE, they took out Honeywell. United Technologies, I guess you could tell Boeing is an industrial average. Caterpillar is still industrial. United Technologies, but all the rest of them are not. I mean, Chevron and Exxon are energy companies. 3M, what the hell is 3M? I'm sorry, they got caught off, so some of you can't read these. But Dow Jones is the company that publishes the Wall Street Journal. But in 2007, Rupert Murdoch, you ever heard of Fox News and Fox? He is a megalomaniac and wants to take over the world. And one of the things he wanted was the Dow company. He wanted the Wall Street Journal. The Bancroft family, which is the family that traces back to 1896 when Charles Dow created the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And by the way, GE is the only company that was in the Dow in 1896 and is still in the Dow. And they said, we don't want to sell. Well, most people put a price tag of about $3 billion on the Wall Street Journal. He said, I'll give you five. And some of the members of the family said, he wants to give us $5 billion for it. And the other members, we're not selling. Oh, yes, we are. And so they sold it. And then he probably said, you know what, I don't want the Dow anymore. I don't want the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I'm not interested in that. And so it looks like they sold it or they're licensing it. I can't figure it out. Go to their website. Go to S&P's website. But it looks like Standard & Poor's is in charge of the Dow now. I'm not sure. I can't figure it out. Check it out. If you can figure it out, tell me. Here they are, folks. The 30 companies in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Now, you know most of them. Any of them you don't? Any of these you don't know? Merck. What does Merck make? And Pfizer. Drugs. They're drug companies. Pharmaceuticals. And you think the Mexican narcosistas make a lot of money off their drugs? You don't know Pfizer and Merck. Any other companies? Travelers Insurance. I'm sorry? DuPont makes chemicals. Teflon, nylon. I think they sold off that, the Teflon. But they make Kevlar. They make stuff that goes into paints and other types of chemicals. They're the ones that created nylon and Kevlar and Teflon and all those other stuff. In Better Living Through Chemistry. You guys don't remember that. But in the 1960s, that was their name on television commercials. Better Living Through Chemistry. And then the druggies would put, you know, LSD. Better Living Through Chemistry on a T-shirt. Marijuana. Yes, any others? Companies you never heard of? United Technologies. Most people have never heard of United Technologies. What do they make?
Technologies,
yes. Otis Elevators, Pratt & Whitney Jet Engines, Sarkos. What's the name of the helicopter company?
Sikorsky.
Sikorsky Helicopters. Yeah, big conglomerate. So, here's the deal, folks. I'm going to give you $10,000 80 years ago. How's that? And what I want you to do is pick one company. Now, was Walmart in the Dow 80 years ago or Microsoft? So look carefully at the company that it replaced. Who replaced or who was replaced by Walmart in 1997? Woolworth? What the hell is Woolworth? Most of you young folks, you never even saw Woolworth. Unless you went down to Mexico, because they're still in Mexico. And they're still here in the United States, but they've evolved into Foot Locker. That's what's left of Woolworth in the United States. But that was the Walmart 50 years ago that your father used to take you to check out the vacuum tubes to see which ones were still working. They had a vacuum tube tester, and they had a soda fountain machine, and they sold you little turtles and goldfish, and the little turtles were about this big. Not allowed, they're illegal to be sold, because his kids would just eat them and bite right into them. But they were cute. The little, remember the turtles? You remember the turtles? Okay, and that's where you got your underwear for the end. Okay, so they're gone, and now Walmart takes over. All right, so what do you think, folks? Who do you want? Goldman Sachs. Government Sachs. Goldman Sachs. What do they do? Huh? What does Government Sachs do? What do they do? You hear about them. They're an investment banker. Not a banker for you or me. They're in bankers for companies, for corporations. You can pick, if somebody picks Goldman Sachs, you can pick him too. You can double. Elizabeth, what do you want? Coca-Cola! Fizzy sugar water and a brown crayon dipped in it. Yes?
Nike!
Everybody wears Nike, right? Okay, who else? Chevron! What does Chevron make? Yeah, gasoline, oil. Very important. Disney! Yeah, woo! We love that Disney! Disney Frozen is, I don't even know what the hell it is, but it's been AT&T. But remember, who did they take out? McDonald's, which is kind of in a little bit of funk right now because people are starting to realize it's garbage. Yes. American Excuse. Express. Okay, who else? Okay, my ringers. Okay, James, what do you want to buy? Procter & Gamble. He already gave it up. Okay, who else? Boeing. What does Boeing make? Jet airplanes. Right, Boeing. Let's put them over here. Boeing. Okay, yeah.
Johnson & Johnson.
Ah, good. I like Johnson & Johnson. Why do we like Johnson & Johnson? Baby powder, baby shampoo, Band-Aid, Tylenol, Q-tips. Disney. Two for Disney. Okay. Merck. We have those drugs. Love those drugs. Yes.
Pfizer.
More drugs. You know, Pfizer makes Viagra. You know that, right? Did you hear that a shipment of Viagra was stolen? The police are looking for a gang of hardened criminals. Oh, I know. Oh, there's more Viagra jokes. There's more Viagra. Yes. Questions? Okay, which one? Jerry. It's not real money. Don't worry about it. Okay. Microsoft. We'll put them over here. Anybody else I didn't get? Come on, I didn't get to everybody. 3M. What does 3M make? Yeah, they make all... Oh, boy, they make thousands of materials. Most of them are all flat, right? Like reflective tape, and they make stuff that wraps around houses, and they make scotch tape and Post-it notes. Who else? Who did we get? Mr. Tapia, did we get you already? George. Cisco. Who did they take out to put in Cisco?
Well, wait, I'm changing.
Insider trading. Want to change it to Procter & Gamble? Okay. Dion.
Daniel.
I'm sorry, Daniel. Can you take a joke? Daniel, which one do you want?
Disney.
Three for Disney. You guys like those videos, huh? You like those videos. Anybody else we didn't get? Marco, did we get you? Exxon Mobil. We already have. Oh, no, we don't have Exxon. Let's put Exxon up here. Did we get everyone? I'm sorry? Two for Johnson & Johnson.
IBM.
Put them over here. All right, everybody? Okay, open up. Everybody? We got everybody? Insider trading, indeed. He was in last semester. He remembers. He's got a good memory. James does. I know. Oh man, they're in everybody's life, right? Gillette, Crest, Tide, Head and Shoulders. I think they sold the Pringles. They used to have Pringles. It looks like it should be in a tube, right? What is it? It's not potato chips. It looks like it should be tennis balls, right? Doesn't look like it should be tennis balls. Okay, so the company that did the best did what? Soap and toilet paper, Charmin and shampoo.
And insider trading.
Well, he says, I do this in the other class. And you know what? They took out Philip Morris a few years ago. If Philip Morris were still here, they'd be number one, but they took tobacco, even more than toilet paper. Okay, great. So, can stocks make us rich? Can they make us sad? Look at the bottom. Who's at the bottom? Now, why? It's not Cisco's fault. Who did they pull out? Look who they pulled out. They waited until General Motors was in bankruptcy before they finally pulled them out of the Dow. They were General Motors. The same thing with AIG. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is the worst average out there. It is only 30 stocks, and because of loyalty or whatever, they wait until it's too late, and then they finally take the company out. And then they put somebody in. For example, who AIG. Who did they take? They took out somebody to put in AIG. They waited until AIG was in bankruptcy. Who is it? Darn it. Who is it? I can't find them. What is it? Say it again. United Healthcare, right. They took out International Paper out of 2004, a company that's been in for a long, long time, 50 years, and they put in AIG because they were new and they are making tons of money, their insurance company, they were doing all the derivatives that screwed the economy up in 2008, and then they pulled them out in 2008, at the bubble, they put in AIG, only to watch them crash and take them out in 2012 and put them in craft. They took them out in 2008. I'm getting confused. They took International Paper out in 2004, right, and then took out 2008 when AIG crashed. So you will hear Everybody talk about the Dow. Oh, the Dow is where it was 12 years ago. Wrong. It's not the same average. It's always changing, and it's usually they do it. They put in Microsoft and Intel in 1999 at the height of the technology bubble, and Microsoft stock fell and did not return to its spot where it was in 2000, the height of the bubble, until 2013. With an entire lost decade and a half for Microsoft. So they have a tendency to put in a company just when it's about ready to implode and then wait until it implodes before they take it out. But it's not the same index. You're here. We're going to do the NASDAQ in a little bit. It's not the same index. So let's take a look. We got enough time. We got 9 more slides. Here is the Dow starting in 1906 to 1924. It started at 100. We had the crash of 1907, which you don't never hear about, but it was a very serious thing, and that's where J.P. Morgan stepped in and basically saved the day. And then, you know, by 1924, it was back up to 100. But then between 1924 and 1929, it went up 3 times, only to crash 89%. And between 1929, it still was at 300. It didn't get back to 300 until 1954. Then between 1954 and 1966, it went up 3 times, a little over 3 times. And then between 1966, it hit 1,000, went down, hit 1,072, went down, hit 1,000 in 1982, 16 years. And then between 1982 and 2000, it went from 1,000 to 11,000. That was the great run-up, folks. Internet, globalization, technology, new sky, blue skies, tech, internet, bubble, loosh. And then between 2000 and 2011, it was 11,000 in 2000. 2011, it was 11,000. But it was not the same index. Are you with me? So it's not a very good measure to begin with. But it's imperfect, but we got to use it. How do you make money in stocks during the times when the markets and capital gains are flat? Because there are going to be times when the markets are going to be flat. They're not really flat, though. You look at the volatility. The answer depends upon whether you are an investor or a speculator trader. If you're an investor, what do? You wait. You just keep buying more shares. You dollar cost average. You collect those dividends because we love dividends. We'll talk about dividends in a bit. And you become part of the benevolent machine, and eventually, if the world doesn't end, you do well. If you're a speculator, if you're a trader, your job is to decide when it's going to crash and then ride it back up again and then sell it before it crashes. And this is why it's George Levin, because this is what these people are teaching them how to do, and it's not easy to do. And all I can say is good luck. What are you going to say, George?
So what's the dollar cost when you're buying it?
$50. Well, you don't know that. All you're doing is buying $50, $100 a month, more if you can afford it. And it's easy with mutual funds. It's a lot harder with stocks, but it's not impossible. You put in $100 a month until you get about $700 or $800, and then you buy 10 shares of Nike or 10 shares of FedEx or one share of Google, right? Whatever Google's at, 585 or something like that. And then you put in $100 a month until you get another $600 or $700, and then you buy 10 shares of Philip Morris. Don't do it. Procter & Gamble. Buy 10 shares of Procter & Gamble. You're with me? You understand? That's dollar cost averaging. And that's the way practically most of us are going to invest, right? This is not... Are you any trust fund babies?
Like
going to inherit a few hundred thousand dollars or a few million dollars in here? Talk to me after class if so. Oh, yeah? Okay, good. Like a bottle of wine? We'll send you a bottle of wine.
Well, we're raised pretty ghetto, but we have a trust fund now.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. But it's probably just for your house, right?
Yeah,
so living trust. Okay, good. Right, good.
If you do the dollar cost averaging, you'll be like 175 years old by the time.
Did you hear what George said? You'll be 175 years old by the time you make any money. That's why you want to start early. I know. I understand. That's why. Yeah. It's why you want to start early. And we saw that. Well, go back to chapter 1. Do what the future value exercises. It doesn't have to be 175 years. But it definitely helps if you're 22 years old or 25 years old or 30 years old or 35 years old, or once you get to 40, it's a lot harder. 45, 50 is when people start thinking, yeah, I better start thinking about retirement. When they see the lecture, then they go, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? What can I say? But half a sandwich is better than no sandwich, right? And then there are many other Dow Jones averages. The transport average, many people look at as a leading indicator to how the economy is doing. Because before the stuff can be bought and sold and created and made into things, it's got to get to where it's got to go. So they will watch the transport average. The utilities average, well, utilities are very stable. You don't have to worry about that. But you put them all together and you get the Dow Jones 65 stocks composite average. And then these two puppies, these bad boys that we actually saw back in Chapter 4, are more and more important. The Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index used to be called the Wilshire 5000. I like that. Wilshire is a company based in L.A., Wilshire Boulevard. And they decided, we're going to create an index of 5,000 stocks. The top 5,000 stocks. And then, by size, what we're going to do is we're going to take away the 500 stocks in the S&P 500. So we'll take out the large companies. And what's left over is the medium-sized and the small companies. And when you did the thrift savings plan, you'll notice that the S fund was the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Stock Market Index, which used to be called the Wilshire 4500, which I like that name a whole lot better, because who can remember Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index? Any of you? I can't either. Okay, but we'll come back. We'll see the ones you have to remember in a bit. Now, the Standard & Poor's 500. This one is probably the, even though it doesn't get as much press as the Dow, this one is probably far more important. Why? Because it is the 500, traditionally 500 largest companies based in the United States. So these are the companies that have their roots deep in the economy, and index funds galore are tied to this puppy. It has lost some of its original focus, and as we said, it's used by many index funds. Why do we say traditionally? Well, when the world started becoming global and companies started buying one another, some of the biggest companies in the United States were bought by companies outside the United States. You ever hear of Anheuser-Busch? Or Arco? Right? Or Chrysler? What are they going to do? Daimler bought Chrysler in 1997. Sold them 10 years later for one. Bought them for $36 billion and then sold them for $7 or $6 billion. Didn't do very well. It used to be called Daimler Chrysler. But in Germany, the joke was, what do they call, how do they pronounce Daimler Chrysler in Germany? Daimler. The Chrysler is silent. It's a joke. But anyway, S&P said, what do we do? What do we do? I mean, Chrysler, it's one of the biggest companies in the United States. So they let Daimler Chrysler into the Standard & Poor's 500. They let Anheuser-Busch InBev, because Anheuser-Busch is now owned by InBev, which is a Belgian-Brazilian conglomeration, figure that one out. Mother Bud is owned by Brazilians. You heard when Bush was being, this joke, when Bush was being briefed about how many soldiers died, and they said 3 Brazilian soldiers died, and he was really upset. He goes, how much is a Brazilian? How many is a Brazilian? Okay, and then there's the Standard & Poor's Industrial 400, the Mid-Cap 400, there's the Small-Cap 600, you add the 500 biggest companies, 400 mid-cap companies, 600 small-cap companies, you get the Standard & Poor's 1500 index, and then transportation, utilities, financials, globals, international, sector indices. There are dozens and dozens of indexes that Standard & Poor's wants to sell and tell you about, so go on their website and check them out. The New York Stock Exchange has their own composite index. The Amex, which is now called the New York Stock Exchange MICIT Composite Index, and then the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is one of the important ones because you will hear the media talk about the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ, even though it's not just technology companies, is often used as a proxy for the technology sector. So when people say, you know, the S&P did really well, but the NASDAQ tanked, it means that large companies in general did okay, but technology companies didn't do too well. The NASDAQ composite went from 800 in 1995 to 5,000 in March of 2000. It then dropped 80% down to 1,200 in October 2000, and it started working its way back up. And just yesterday, it closed for the first time over 5,000. But is it the same index? Hell no. Many of those companies, some of them are still around, Amazon and eBay, but many of those companies in the tech sector are gone. eToys, Pets.com, WebGrocer, WebVan, these companies that were going to sell you your groceries, you're never going to get out of your house, the grocery is going to come right to your house. Now Vons does that. AOL, remember them? They're still around, but they're not anywhere near what they are. No, it's because they crashed. Some of them were never going to make a dime of money, and they crashed. And now the Nasdaq is a very different index with Farsbook Titter's on the New York Stock Exchange, and Google and Apple. Apple was worth very little at the time. So this is the important one, Nasdaq. Now the total stock. We've already made mention of these guys. We've already made mention of the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index and the U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index. Why are these important? Because it is typical that you will have an index fund or two in your 401k plan, like the Thrift Savings Plan, that mirror either the 5,000 or the 4,500. I still call them the Wall Street 4,500, the Wall Street 5,000. What I've seen more is that you will have an index fund that mirrors the S&P 500 and an index fund that mirrors the, I'll just call it the Wilshire 4,500. But you have to remember that, at least identify it, you don't have to come up with a name, that it's the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index. And then there are three more that we want to take a look at. The Russell 2000, and we'll be done. The Russell 2000 small companies. How did Russell? Russell is another company, Frank Russell Associates. In fact, they're the ones who are responsible for the data that we saw in Chapter 1 that said small company stocks really did well. They took the top 3,000 companies by size and lopped off the top 1,000. So that's going to show you how small and mid-sized companies do, small cap and mid-cap. Then it wasn't until the 70s or so that some people started worrying about, wait a minute, we are investing outside the United States. There were only a few companies that were doing it, T. Rowe Price, American, Oppenheimer had one. Who else? Somebody else. I can't remember. Franklin Templeton. And they said, well, how do we measure? We need an index. So Capital International, which is actually part of American Funds, created an index called the World Fund. But then they said, wait a minute, this isn't right. We're making the index, and we're measuring ourselves by the index. There's a big conflict of interest here. So they sold it to Morgan Stanley. So you don't have to remember that MSCI stands for Morgan Stanley Capital International. All you have to be able to do is recognize it. But it's the World Index. And the world, we know, is global. It means everybody, including the United States. But it is, and it was, and still is, only the developed world. And for international, they created the MSCI. I have heard it pronounced a couple of different ways, but the one way I mostly heard it pronounced is the EAFE. EAFE. Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So this was international. But again, it was and still is mostly the developed world. So the world index was United States, Canada, Western Europe, Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan, Australia, right? Well, that was it. That was basically it. The EAFE was all of those things except for the United States. But in the last 20, 30 years, the developing markets have, you know, been on a tear up until the last couple of years. But they sometimes crash. They're very volatile. And so instead of just adapting the world and the EAFE to include developing countries and developing economies, they've come up with two new names. The MSCI All Country World Index and the MSCI All Country World Ex-USA Index. Don't you just love those guys? If they would have asked me, I would tell them, don't do this. Don't do this. That's a stupid name. The World Index, the IFA, those things you can remember. Who can remember? All Country World Index XUSA. Whatever. But so here, of all those indexes, folks, these are the ones I want you to know. So let's do stock worksheet number one. And on the back is stock worksheet number two, so don't lose this. And I have a three-hole punch up there for those of you who want to use it. Okay. Everybody got enough? Okay. Let's skip numbers 1 through 6 for now. Yay. Okay, thank you. Let's skip numbers 1 through 6 because we want to get through number the matching. So take a couple of moments and match the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 indices that we have here with their descriptions. And these are the ones I want you to memorize. These are the ones we want you to memorize. So take a couple of minutes. We only have a couple of minutes left. Take a couple of minutes, and we'll do it together. Oh, here. Right here. Right there. Okay. This guy right here. Stock worksheet number one. These guys right here. Okay. Take your time, but hurry a little. Oh, poop. Poop, poop, poop. We didn't get to 60. That's all right. That's all right. Crooks and castles. Okay, 30 seconds, because I have to give you the answers. We don't have time. We ran out of time. What? Okay, let's do it together. Letter A, market index designed to gauge the total United States stock market. What a dumb name. Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. It used to be called the Wilshire 5000. You will see it in your index fund as total market. B, stock market average made up of 30 high-quality stocks selected for total market value and broad public ownership and believed to reflect overall United States market activity. That's the Dow, even though it's the one of the worst, it's the most popular. C, market index designed to measure the stock markets of the world excluding the United States. Right, the IFA, which is being replaced by All Country World Index XUSA. And then market index most often uses a measure of the strength or weakness of medium-sized and small-sized companies based in the United States. Russell 2000. You also hear a little bit about the S&P small cap, yeah. Traditionally, the 500 largest companies based in the U.S., although now some may be foreign, most are based in the United States and are chosen for their market size, liquidity, and industry group representation. The all-important S&P 500, sometimes it's called the S&P, even though they have dozens. And market index mostly composed mainly of high-tech companies. That's the NASDAQ. Market index designed to measure the global stock market, including the United States. That's the World MX, MSCI, but now being replaced by the All Country World Index, which includes India and China and Mexico. And what's the market index designed to measure the total United States stock market, excluding the largest 500 companies? Mid-cap, small-cap companies we're interested in, very popular with index funds and 401k plans. Yes, Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market. What is this? Wilshire 4500 was a whole lot easier to remember. Okay, so you need to study these. You need to know these. Yes?
Can you
move down? Yeah, here, I'm going to put it on the screen. It's on the screen here. There it is. And what we'll do is we'll pick up from here. Sorry I took up you a little late. Kept you. We will go, we'll continue from here, end with some comments on market indices and averages, and then get to some stock market statistics. I'm sorry, statistics.
Okay.
Let me hide this part. I don't want you to see the top part. I want to see the top part. Hang on a minute. This is bad. Don't want to see the top part. Okay, there you go.
Thursday morning.
I'll put it in my book right now. 8:30.
I got most of
that. Yeah. Okay. Yes, please. Turn it in. We want to see it. We want you to do it.
Are you doing the people that came in late?
Yes, let me get the people who came in late. Hang on a minute. I'm not good. I hear. Eric. 8:30. Okay. Done. Alert. I will. You too. One day before. Done. Ta-da. Okay. So who snuck in late? Where's my book? Who stole my book? There you go. Turn this off.